We've been working our way through the book of Ruth, now in chapter 3, getting near the end. And most people think of the book of Ruth as a love story between Ruth and Boaz. That's the real point of it. And yet up until this point, we haven't seen any romantic love demonstrated at all. And so it hasn't really proven itself to be a love story to this point. In fact, if any relationship would be at the forefront, it would be the deep covenant commitment of Ruth to her widowed mother-in-law, Naomi. That's kind of been the relationship we've seen at the forefront thus far. But today, on Mother's Day, we'll explore a story of risk and boldness, of love and commitment. And guys, don't worry, next week we've kind of got this legal battle with Boaz. It's kind of a courtroom law and order thing, so we'll get there. But today we have a romantic comedy for you. All right, it's a special day. On this morning, surrounded by flowers, it would just seem appropriate to tell you a love story. So that's what we'll do. But you might be surprised by some of the twists and the way it plays out, because it doesn't really play out the way you would necessarily expect. For those just joining us in our series, the book of Ruth is about a woman named Naomi who lost her husband and her two sons, but her one daughter-in-law, Ruth, committed herself to taking care of her and sticking together. And so they returned from the land of Moab, which is where Ruth was from, and they returned back to Bethlehem, their hometown, without any of the men in their life. They had all died, and there was a famine before this, and so they really had not a lot going for them. They had no protector, no way of income. They had nothing. They were left as beggars. And Ruth heads out and decides she's going to glean in the field. It's now the barley harvest and then the wheat harvest right after it. And gleaning is kind of picking up the scraps. And so she would follow along and pick up the scraps just to gather what was left over so that they would have something to eat. And she happens to, in God's sovereignty, come across the field with this man named Boaz, who's just a godly man, a worthy man, a man of substance and valor. And he sees Ruth, and knowing her kindness to her mother-in-law and just her desperate need as a destitute widow and foreigner, he just blesses her abundantly, and he just gives and gives and gives. He gives protection to her and food and water to her, and then just gives more barley than she could almost carry, and does that every day, provides abundantly for her. And Naomi, who was quite bitter earlier on at the loss of her husband and sons and just angry towards God, when she sees this 50-pound sack of grain that Ruth brings home on the first day, see, not so much that God's going to make them rich and therefore he's good, but just a sign and a picture that he had not abandoned them as she had thought. And her heart melts and really turns back to Yahweh, their God. And she sees that God is sovereign, and he is also good and gracious to them. And then this other theme that comes out is this man, Boaz, not only is a generous man, he's actually a relative of theirs, though they didn't know they had any relatives alive. And Boaz is able to redeem them, to bring them out of their state of poverty, to they could return to land again and to a future. And hopefully the idea is in Naomi's mind that Boaz could be the one who marries Ruth and redeems them, covers their shame and provides a future and a hope for them. And this is really what they're lacking at this point. And at the sight of that 50-pound sack of grain and all that it stands for as far as God's grace still with them, and the hearing of Boaz's name and the realizing that God has provided a potential redeemer in Boaz, Naomi goes on this journey from being filled with bitterness and anger to be filled with joy and hope and worship. Now, that's where we left off the end of chapter 2. But now, as we enter chapter 3, 6 or 7 weeks have passed. We went from the beginning of the harvest to the end of the harvest, and we really know nothing more about Ruth's interactions with Boaz. If they did interact more, the author doesn't tell us. I suspect that there are no more meaningful interactions between them, or else we would know about it, although I'm sure that Boaz continued to provide protection and safety and food and kindness towards Ruth and through Ruth, Naomi. Although there's no real developments in this relationship. The original hope that started out in Naomi's heart and mind is starting to dwindle. She had originally hoped that Boaz would provide so much for them and be a potential redeemer for them, and yet nothing has happened. The possibilities that were there remain just that, just possibilities. And now we're entering the time of the barley winnowing, which probably happens immediately after the cutting and the harvesting. So with the harvest coming to a close, the harvest ending, Ruth will soon have no reason to see Boaz anymore. There may be no more opportunities for them to even see each other as this harvest time comes to an end. So the hope that was awakened in Naomi in chapter 2 will now give birth to a risk-taking righteousness. I say righteousness because it's motivated by a desire to do what is right and what is good. And I say risk-taking because the hope within her motivates her to do some dangerous things, to take some risks, to take some chances. Her desire for righteousness doesn't allow her to just play it safe, but motivates her to take risks, trusting that God is good and God is sovereign. Okay? So let's take a look at what her crazy plot is and all that she does towards bringing this to fruition in chapter 3, verse 1. Take a look. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say, I will do." So we've got this kind of elaborate plan of Naomi. First, we want to go, why would she do this? What's her motivation? So she's got a number of motivations. First is, her first motive is that grain is nice, but Ruth, you need a husband. You need a husband. She desires rest for Ruth, and by that she means security, safety, peace, provision. This is all that she desires for Ruth. And really, what we see here is that Naomi has really adopted Ruth as her own daughter, and they've developed this deep bond. I mean, in chapter 1, Ruth kind of gives this glorious statement of commitment and covenant with Naomi, and Naomi almost seems to not even care. She says nothing and just keeps going, almost like, oh, fine if I'm stuck with you. But now, in chapter 3, we see that Naomi really actually does care for Ruth, and they do have this deep bond. And just as Ruth has worked hard to provide for Naomi, Naomi wants to provide for Ruth. And to seek rest for her. And as her adopted mother, she feels it as her responsibility to provide a worthy husband for Ruth. Now, normally this would have been the responsibility of Ruth's father, but Ruth's father is A, in Moab, far away, and B, he doesn't worship Yahweh. He's unable to find a worthy, godly, honorable man, since he himself is not one. The Moabites were a sexually confused people and morally not that strong. And so Naomi's father would be of no help to her in this situation as far as providing a worthy husband for her. And so Naomi is motivated, you know, this grain is nice, but you really need a husband. And her second motive is that Boaz, he is the only one who can redeem us. And so we have to do something. Third, she's motivated because for whatever reason, Boaz is not making any moves. He's not taking initiative with establishing a relationship with Ruth. Boaz is not up to anything at all. And so she feels she has to take action. And finally, Ruth's time with Boaz is running out. In a week or two, you might not see him till next year. So we can't wait for Boaz any longer. It's time to give this relationship a little nudge. It's time to pull a Ruth, is what she needs to do. And so Naomi comes up with this plan. And her plan is, first, Ruth, you need to get all dolled up. Okay? Remember, Boaz has only ever seen her sweaty, hard working out in the field in the baking sun collecting grain all day. That's the only context where they've seen each other. And so Ruth has never really been clean, attractive in front of Boaz. It might be a hindrance. And so she tells her, wash. So take a bath. Get all cleaned up. Second, anoint yourself. Here, the word referring to kind of a perfumed olive oil that would be used. So she's put perfume on. Smell nice. Instead of smelling like barley, smell attractive. And to put on her cloak. This is her outer garment. The NIV says best clothes. It's probably not the best. It seems to be interpreting a bit. But it's not so much her fancy clothes, nor is it seductive clothing. There's a different word for that that's not used here. The emphasis is just on being clean and attractive without being provocative or seductive. There's one other possibility that could be going on here that some scholars point to, which is this same pattern of washing, anointing, and putting on a cloak is used of David when he's done mourning the death of his son in 2 Samuel 12. So it's a possibility that perhaps until now, Ruth has still been in an active mourning for her dead husband and has been wearing her widow's clothing that signifies that she is a mourning widow. And perhaps now what's going on is Naomi is telling Ruth, okay, dress normal. Your time of mourning is complete. And appear before Boaz and in a way that indicates to him that you are no longer in mourning and you're ready to move on. Right? So that may be what's going on. But either way, the point is that Ruth needs to appear before Boaz clean and attractive. And so that's the step one. The second thing is she needs to go down to the threshing floor where Boaz is. The threshing floor is where they would take the grain and separate the wheat from the grain, the barley or the wheat from the chaff by throwing it up in the air, and it's up on a hill and the breeze would come and blow the chaff away. I know you know all this. You've farmed your whole life. Boaz would likely do this in the evening where there's a steady breeze. And so, and then what would happen is the men who are doing this threshing, they would sleep on the threshing floor because this is valuable barley. I mean, if they can't just go home, they stay out in the field at the threshing floor so they don't get robbed. So they work all evening threshing and separating the chaff from the wheat or barley. And then they spend the night sleeping by the grain to protect it because they spent all year working for this. This is their money. And so they want to protect that, and so they sleep there all night. And so while Boaz is down there, Ruth is to go down and wait until everyone is sleeping and then go uncover his feet and lie down, she tells him. Strange, right? So some interpreters have taken this, because they don't know what to make of it, they've taken this as a euphemism for some sort of sexual act. And so Ruth is to go and act like a prostitute with Boaz, that it's not his feet she's uncovering. That's what some have suggested. But really, this reads far more into the text than is meant. It also makes no sense in the context, because one, that Boaz is an honorable and godly man who praises Ruth for acting in a worthy and honorable way, which wouldn't be the case if that was true. And second, Ruth and Naomi, neither of them show any motives in here except for marriage for Ruth. That's their goal, right? That they would need to provide rest for Ruth. And so acting like a prostitute with Boaz doesn't help them at all in that way. It doesn't help them achieve their goals. In fact, it probably hurts their goals in a significant way. And so it would make no sense for her to do that if that was the case, because the goal is for Ruth to marry Boaz, not to have a role in the barley, so to speak. Literally, yeah. So she's supposed to go down to the threshing floor, and then she's supposed to uncover his feet so that he wakes up. It's the idea. And then to wait and see what Boaz says to them, or says to her. And so you might ask, like, what is going on? What's the whole point? This is kind of weird. And it is. But what she's doing is she is informing Boaz of her love and that she wants him to propose to her. That's what she's communicating through this. Now, this plan is delicate and risky and carries huge potential for disaster. In some ways, you go, Naomi, what are you thinking? But the issue is, will Boaz interpret her actions correctly, or will he misread them? If you're Boaz and you're sleeping by your barley pile, and you wake up and there's a dolled up, beautiful woman at your feet lying there watching you, how are you supposed to read this? It's pretty ambiguous. You could read it in a few ways. He could misinterpret and think that Ruth is acting like a prostitute. He could understand what Ruth is meaning, but still shun her for being so forward and blunt and bold with him. Or he could understand and respond favorably. It could go a number of ways. Because socially, this is a little crazy. Even if he does understand, a woman proposing to a man, a younger person proposing to a much older man, he's significantly older than her, he's a silver fox, and a peasant, field worker, proposing to a landowner, a businessman, and finally, a Moabite widow proposing to an Israelite man. This is all crazy in so many ways. This is big time risky. It could go wrong. It could go bad in so many ways. But Naomi, her faith is strong. She has confidence in Boaz's integrity and that he'll respond appropriately. And she has confidence that God will provide for them to such an extent that she is able to take a tremendous, tremendous risk, trusting that God will provide and that it'll work out. So let's see what happens. Verse 6. So she, that's Ruth, went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." So Ruth goes down. She watches Boaz eat and drink and be in a good mood at the end of a hardworking, fruitful day. And the text is clear that Boaz isn't drunk, in case that's what you're wondering. He's worked hard, he's eaten well, and he's in a good mood, but it's not that he's sloshed. He is thinking clearly. And then she sees him lying down beside the pile of grain, and tired from a long day's work, he falls asleep right away. She uncovers his feet and lays down nearby to see what happens. And the hope is that his cold feet would wake him up, the cold air on his feet, and that he would wake up quietly and see Ruth there so that they're able to talk, as opposed to talking to him and waking, because there's other people in the room as well, right? The other workers are sleeping in, around the whole threshing floor. But on this warm spring evening, with Boaz really tired after a long day, he just keeps sleeping. His feet are uncovered. He just keeps sleeping all the way to midnight, it says, with his feet exposed to the air. And at midnight, he kind of startles. Could also translate it shivers, which would make sense, probably because of the cold night air on his exposed feet. And as he reaches for his blanket and looks down, whoa, there's Ruth. There's a woman at his feet. He doesn't know who it is yet. And there she's just laying there watching him. Wasn't expecting that. That's not what he had in mind. And he startles and wants to know, who are you? Good question. And she responds, "I am Ruth, your servant." She identifies herself, approaches in humility. And in this strange situation, Ruth's presence, she's all dolled up, looking great, could be interpreted in several ways, right? But to make sure that her intentions are clear from the start, and she doesn't stop and just say, "I am Ruth, your servant," and she doesn't follow Naomi's advice and just see what he does, but she quickly lets her intentions be known, because her goal is covenant marriage, not a roll in the barley. So she continues and says, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." Okay? So Ruth, the humble, quiet servant, boldly takes charge and makes this extraordinary request. A lowly servant, an uninvited visitor, a simple peasant, a foreigner, making such a bold request to Boaz. I mean, it's risky and shocking, because in many ways, practically, what she's saying is, "Marry me, Boaz." Hi, what are you doing at my feet again? "Marry me, Boaz." She says, "Spread your wings over me." The same words you remember were used in chapter 2, where Boaz says to Ruth that she has sought refuge under God's wings. And now she's used that same phrase, and it's because she is seeking refuge and safety and security under Boaz, under his protection. Now, for many of us, this might be a strange phrase, that to spread her wings, or spread his wings over her. But we can see from other places in the Hebrew Bible that this is a well-known idiom for marriage, that it's a picture of marriage. The idea being that a man would cover a woman with his wing is a symbol of his protection and provision for her, and that she will find shelter and safety under his care. So that's the idea. And so this would be a well-known kind of picture or idiom or image for marriage that she is using. And so she's essentially saying, "Boaz, I want you to marry me. I want you to propose to me. I want to be your wife." And now Naomi told her just to lay there and see what he says, to allow Boaz to take the next step, and hopefully he would just understand what her presence means. Ruth doesn't do that. She actually comes out and blurts out her intentions from the start. And just essentially she's proposing to him instead of just waiting to see if he proposes to her. I mean, it's not as romantic as sky-riding roses and champagne or a trip to Paris, but there is something kind of adorable about the heart that can't hold itself in 1 second longer, but has to blurt out the deep emotions that flow out of her heart in that moment. It's kind of cute. But this whole thing up to now is really kind of shocking and risky and strange. I mean, doesn't Ruth know her place? I mean, doesn't she know who she is as a destitute widow from a foreign land? She has no place being here and doing this. And this could go wrong in so many ways. I mean, Boaz could have been offended at her forwardness and just sent her packing. He could have misunderstood her as trying to offer something immoral and sent her away shamed, could be publicly shame her for what she's done here. Alternatively, although he's a godly man, he could take advantage of her right there, right now. I mean, no one would believe her word against his, and they're alone together. Or he could have just embarrassed. He could have been embarrassed and angered by her bold request, really stepping out of her place and just coming out like that. I mean, who does she think she is? And this is all assuming that no one else stumbles across Ruth before Boaz wakes up. I mean, what if some of the other workers just are just milling about and find her? What are you doing here? I mean, that wouldn't end well for her either. So there's so many ways that this could go wrong. And so take a look at verse 10 and see how it actually plays out. See what Boaz has to say to this strange turn of events. And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness," that's that word hesed, "this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." So, first off, he blesses her. He calls her my daughter, which he's called her before. It's a kind term. It shows the respect and gentleness he has for her. It also may indicate the age gap a little bit. But he praises her for her remarkable act of kindness, a covenant love. It's this term we've seen a lot in the book of Ruth. And this most recent act of kindness, namely her coming to the threshing floor and asking him to marry her, is even more kind than her previous great act of kindness, which was her abandoning her family to stick with Naomi and to put her future with Naomi. And so he says that this recent act of kindness towards Boaz is even greater than her act of kindness towards Naomi earlier back in chapter 1 and chapter 2. And so he feels that it's a great act of kindness on Ruth's part in that she has come to Boaz instead of pursuing all the younger men. He's blown away that Ruth has not pursued someone younger or someone wealthier or someone just better in his mind. She could have pursued, the sense you get from Boaz is she could have got anyone she wanted. She could have pursued anyone she wanted, yet she chose him. Because Boaz views her as totally out of his league. She had her pick of the young men, and yet she had pursued Boaz. And so he feels that this is a great act of kindness towards him. See, it's funny because while Ruth and Naomi were worried that Boaz wasn't interested because nothing was progressing, there was no movement in that relationship, it turns out that he believed that Ruth was just totally out of his league. She's much younger than he is, and she's well known by all. She could have had her pick of the men of Bethlehem. She could have had anyone she wanted, is Boaz's perspective. It also seems that he's being respectful, given that she's a fairly recent widow, and so he doesn't want to encroach on her at all. It also seems because he's in a place of power over her, and he's a good and godly man, he doesn't want to take advantage of his position in any way. And so, you know, a poor, destitute peasant who is entirely relying on the grace of Boaz to survive day to day would have a hard time saying no, if she desired, to a person in power like that over her. And so, recognizing that relationship, he refuses to take advantage of his position. So this seems to be the motives going on in Boaz's heart in relation to Ruth. But he is blown away that she would even consider him, because it seems like she could have got anyone, because she's a babe. Boaz then tells her, don't fear, and that he will do all that she has asked. He'll do it all. He will marry her, for everyone knows that she is a worthy woman. She may be young and attractive, but far more importantly, she is a woman of substance and worth, of quality. Boaz knows what Proverbs 31:10 will tell us, which is an excellent wife. It's the exact same word, excellent wife, worthy woman. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Boaz knows that. And just like the woman in Proverbs 31, Ruth is also praised in the gates. The whole town, all the townsmen, know that she is a worthy woman. Now, I want to stop and think about that for a second. Let me ask you this question. How is it that Ruth, a destitute, widowed foreigner who has been in town 6 or 7 weeks, has gone from a complete stranger, she was originally known as the Moabite that came back with Naomi, how does she go from that to being well known in all of Bethlehem, known by all the towns, all the townsmen, as a woman of worth, to such an extent that Boaz believes that she could have easily found a husband among any of the young men in town. How do you go from the Moabite to the woman that everyone would love to marry in 6 weeks? How does she do that? Well, I'll tell you, it wasn't by putting herself forward. It wasn't by blowing her own trumpet. Instead, all she did in this period was make herself Naomi's servant, who worked without complaint all day in the heat to take care of her destitute mother-in-law. I mean, how did Ruth become the most eligible bachelorette in Bethlehem? By humble service that revealed her godly character and worth, by serving, by putting others first. It's funny. It's backwards from what we would expect in our culture. But the way she became the most eligible bachelorette, the way she became in just 6 short weeks the woman that everyone would love to marry, is just by graciously, sacrificially serving her mother-in-law of all people. And so in doing so, she has become recognized as a worthy woman. Now, for all of Boaz's and Ruth's differences, and there are many, they're actually equally yoked, as the Apostle Paul would say it. Both of them have a spiritual maturity and a substance of character. Boaz was called a worthy man in chapter 2, verse 1, and now here Ruth is called a worthy woman. And they both love and trusted God and walked in holiness. And so they seem as just a perfect match in that way, despite all their differences economically and socially. And so here we have Ruth, who is essentially proposed, or at least asked to be proposed to, and Boaz, who says yes. But there's a snag, and there's always a good snag in a love story, isn't there? There's always that one last thing they have to overcome, that love has to overcome. Boaz is indeed a redeemer for Ruth, it's true. And this isn't news to him. His heart has often hoped for this. But there's a snag, there's a closer relative, there's a closer redeemer who has first legal right to marry Ruth and redeem their land. Boaz is determined, though, to do the right thing and to sort it out legally. You know, it's funny, because actually up until chapter 2, Naomi and Ruth believed they had no redeemer, no hope, and no relatives. And here they find out they actually have too many. Yeah, I think it's just another little glimpse of God's humorous grace, as they were just feeling like they had no hope and no way of restoring their place in society and having that future and hope that they need. And up until chapter 2, they didn't even know Boaz exists, but it turns out there's even more redeemers. Now they have too many redeemers, and God graciously and humorously is providing more than they ever could have asked or imagined. But how Ruth's heart must have sank to hear that there is a closer redeemer. But Boaz is determined to do things right. He is eager and determined to find a way to marry Boaz, but he won't do it, or to marry Ruth, but he won't do it without cheating. He won't do it by fudging the law. He's going to do things right. Now, I think it's important for us to see this because we want to see the righteous character of Boaz in this situation. Think about it. It's been a good day. He's worked hard. He has brought in a good profit. He has ate and drank, and his heart is merry. He's feeling good about life. And the woman he loves, whom he thought was out of his league, but turns out she's interested in him, is laying at his feet, all dolled up, looking gorgeous, like he's never seen her before. Usually she's sweatier and smellier. But she's there, and she's just professed her love to him. It's midnight. It's a beautiful night. The stars are out. His heart is full of love and joy. He's alone, essentially, with her. Everyone else doesn't seem to be in the area, or they're all sleeping or something like that. And she desires him, and he desires her. And yet he stops it. Out of righteousness, his passion for righteousness trumps his passion for Ruth. His character and integrity, the man who he is when no one is watching, trumps the desires of his heart. Because Boaz truly is a man of worth, of substance, of quality. Any old schmuck can get the girl, right? It takes heroic substance to do the right thing in a situation like this. To not just win the girl, but to vow to protect her and provide for her and redeem her as covenant partner for life. I mean, you look around and there's some guys who are frankly just kind of idiots, and they've got women too. I mean, any bozo can get the girl. Any bozo can kiss her. But it takes a man to redeem her. It takes a man of substance to do the right thing and to protect her and to do what's best for her and to enter covenant with her. That's actual heroic, manly work. All sorts of just idiots can kiss a girl. That doesn't take much at all, apparently, but it takes a real man like Boaz to do the right thing and to actually provide for what Ruth really needs, which is a covenant partner and redemption, not just a kiss, right? So he even swears on his own life that if this other redeemer is unwilling, Boaz will certainly redeem her and will certainly marry her and will certainly take care of her. And so Boaz, being a godly, honorable man who cares first and foremost about protecting and providing for Ruth, is in a tough situation, though. He refuses, one, to compromise in any way or to do anything sexual with her before they're legally married. Even though nobody knows they're there, and even though, you know, she's a total babe and he's a silver fox and he's a worthy man of substance and worth, so he's not gonna go there. He's valiant, and so he respects her enough that he will give her the honor and dignity that she deserves, and so she deserves covenant marriage, and he will give that to her. And yet he's also unwilling to send her home dressed like that, all looking good, and send her home from the field to the city in the middle of the night. He's not willing to do that either because he wants to protect her. So he has her lay at his feet until the morning for the rest of the night. Now, this situation is far from ideal, and it's fraught with potential problems, and yet Boaz finds the honorable and righteous thing to do, even though Ruth has put him in a really bad situation. And it's kind of been an awkward place for him, and yet he tries to find the righteous thing to do in that situation. And then look what happens in verse 14. Verse 14. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before anyone could recognize another, before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." And he said, "Bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out." So she held it out, and he measured out 6 measures of barley, and he put it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." So early in the morning, Boaz loads Ruth up with even more barley, more grain, and sends her home without anyone knowing she was ever there. Now, this garment full of grain was Boaz's sign of good faith that he's giving actually to Naomi, so that Naomi, who's providing for Ruth in this way, will know what Boaz is up to. And it's a promise, if you will. He is determined to carry through, and this gift of grain is a promise to them that he will do it, that he will be good to his word. And it's a gift to show Naomi how serious he is. Now, this seems to be the way Naomi understands it, because she hears Ruth's story and she sees the gift and she concludes, "The man will not rest, but he will settle the matter today." That's how she interprets it. And so she's essentially saying, "Sit tight, Ruth. You won't have to wait long, because Boaz means business and he won't wait until he sorts all of this out this very day." So we have this determination from Boaz to make it right, this determination to do whatever it takes legally to marry her and to redeem her and to provide for her. See, because Boaz is an upright, wealthy, land-owning, business-running Israelite, and he is willing to do whatever it takes to redeem and to marry Ruth, a poor, destitute, widowed Moabite, living as a beggar and providing for her mother-in-law. I mean, this is the beautiful story of Boaz and Ruth. It's a powerful and beautiful love story, but more than that, it shows us a picture of our Redeemer, okay? Jesus is our greater Boaz, who redeems his bride, the church, who provides for his bride, the church. Though we are filled with sin and failure and brokenness, Jesus still sacrifices himself to redeem us and to give us a hope and a future and to cover us with his mighty wings. Here we see a picture of Jesus and what he has done for his bride, the church. Though we socially, economically, we have no business even talking to him because of his tremendous holiness and our sin and brokenness, and yet Jesus is our Redeemer, and he has provided redemption for us. We have a righteous, gracious, and strong Redeemer in Jesus Christ. Let's pray. God, I thank you that though we are sinful, though we are broken and suffering, though we are racked with our own guilt, you have provided a Redeemer for us. You have provided one who has brought us a covering, has removed our shame, has paid for our sin. And we thank you for Jesus Christ, who redeemed his bride, the church, who has provided abundantly for us. We thank you for his body and his blood. We thank you that he gave himself in our place. We recognize this morning that that should be our body and it should be our blood that was spilt for our own sin. That would be justice. That would be the right thing. And yet, your mercy has overcome justice, and you have provided a way of grace and forgiveness for us, that we can have life because of the price that Christ has paid with his own body. We give you thanks for how good you are to us. As we enter this time of communion, I pray that we would feel deeply the symbols of the Lord's Supper, that we would not just go through motions, but that we would taste and drink your very body and blood and be impacted by the sacrifice that you have made in our place. We thank you that we have a true and greater Boaz in Jesus Christ. We have a Redeemer. You have not left us in our destitute, sin-racked, broken state, but you have brought us to yourself. We are reconciled. We have grace and forgiveness and peace with you. We give you thanks. So as we enter this time of communion, as we celebrate the Lord's Supper, I pray that you would meet with us, that we would sense your presence, that we would know your grace, that we would feel your forgiveness, and that you would be glorified in our midst. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.